Spirit Blade Underground, February 26, 2009.
Warning, access restricted. Enter password. DNA verification. Processing. Verification complete. Access granted. Welcome.
Spirit Blade Underground, February 26, 2009.
Hello and welcome to the Monitor Room at the Spirit Blade Underground podcast. I'm Peter France, and the creator of Spirit Blade Productions. We're bringing you Christian sci-fi and fantasy that's unsterilized, unsafe, and unleashed on your ears and imagination. You can check out what we're doing and grab lots of cool downloads at www.spiritblade.net, where you can also find out how you can get involved with what we're doing. So I hope you check it out. We've got a ton of stuff to cover today. I've got like just a boatload of movie tidbits of upcoming movies and stuff that was really cool for me to find out that I cannot wait to share with you guys. We're also going to be looking at 1 Corinthians as well. And I've got a cool geek website to show you on the Christian Geek Radar today. But first, let's take a quick look at updates.
File access. Updates.
All right. Last week, I had a great conversation with internet buddy Winston Crutchfield about Spirit Blade and current fads and failures in the comic book world. So if you want to get a little extra tidbit about Spirit Blade that you can't get on the website, go over to criticalpressmedia.com to hear my thoughts on the first two projects, and also our musings on Green Lantern and other DC and Marvel comic book stuff going on. I've gotten some great audition responses from folks both locally and outside of the Phoenix area. So it's really cool. Really cool. I just have to assume that God is working in this, because I really did not expect I was going to get the turnout that I did in terms of responses from people. So that's very exciting to me to see all the options I'm going to have in the end. I can't wait. So there's plenty of room for more auditions as well. If you are far away from me, or if you are here in the Phoenix Valley area, go ahead, shoot me an email, info@spiritblade.net, and I'll get you all the audition information that you need to audition for our upcoming project, Pilgrim's Progress, which I will be casting. The deadline for to get your audition either into me or scheduled with me is March 20th, and then I'll be casting very quickly after that, and we'll start recording here. I can't wait. Very exciting stuff. Anyway, that's it as far as updates. Let's get on with the show.
Primary features.
Movie information.
Activated.
Brace yourselves. I've got a ton of cool movie news to catch you up on, and I found it all at mania.com, which I would highly recommend that you check out if you're a geek and like to kind of be in the loop about stuff going on in comics and movies and TV shows that pertain to geekiness. Mania.com is where I get a lot of my information. They used to be comics2film.com, but they kind of absorbed comics to film. Mania did. And anyway, Neil H. Moritz and his original films are in final negotiations to develop and produce for Columbia Pictures a contemporary version of Total Recall, which will be based on the 1990 Arnold Schwarzenegger sci-fi action movie by director Paul Verhoeven. Moritz said he hoped the advancements in technology and state-of-the-art visual effects can help tell the Recall story in a fresh way. Well, it may be in a fresh way, but I hope he's not assuming that it's going to be in a better way. I mean, I guess 20 years, you know, they've done reboots in much less time, if you look like the Hulk franchise recently, but gosh, it seems like we're doing the remake treatment pretty frequently these days. And I think the original Total Recall still holds up really, really well. And, you know, I know that the animatronics don't always look the best, but CGI, you know, can be pretty crappy too. And I would prefer, if it's going to look bad or kind of fake, I'd prefer to at least feel like the actors are actually looking at something real and touching something real instead of interacting with a cartoon, which is what bad CGI looks like to me. So anyway, I guess my best of luck to you, Mr. Moritz, but I'm not optimistic. Warner Brothers and a pair of top-tier production banners are in the early stages of a reboot of The Never-Ending Story. you're like me, you probably grew up with that movie. That was a very formative kind of fantasy movie experience when I was younger. The new movie will examine the more nuanced details, says Mania.com, of the book that were glossed over in the first pick. Now, I have not read the book that Neverending Story is based on, so I'm not sure what those nuanced details are. But if you've read the book and you have an idea of what those might be, I would love to hear your take on what the original movie left out that the new version might include. Director Ridley Scott has Kate Blanchett, or is it Blanchett? I never know. Anyway, Kate, she's going to be Maid Marian in his upcoming Robin Hood movie, and she's going to star opposite Russell Crowe as Robin of Locksley. And it looks like this is going to be more of a dramatic kind of take to it, a little bit more of a romance slash drama stuff, which, you know, I kind of feel like it's been done before. Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, you know? And again, I don't know if this is a remake. You know, it's not really a remake because, I mean, Robin Hood wasn't invented by the Kevin Costner movie, thank goodness. You know, hopefully it'll have some cool action in it as well, and it won't just be kind of the romance because, you know, I thought that they blended the romance well in Prince of Thieves, and hopefully, I don't think we need to go any heavier on the romance. I think Robin Hood is by nature a very adventurous type character. Anyway, but yeah, shout out to my sister Corinne, who's a big Robin Hood fan. I'm sure she's not listening to this podcast, though. She thinks I'm a real geek. Anyway, but you're missing out, Corinne. If you're not listening to this podcast, you missed the scoop. Anyway, Suicide Squad, a DC Comics property, is in development as a feature film, which I think this is a cool idea, but I've got some questions about it, though. Suicide Squad, if you're not familiar with the DC concept, it's a DC Universe team of supervillains that are sent out by the government on highly dangerous black ops missions. If they survive the mission, then they either are pardoned for their crimes or their sentences are heavily reduced, and reduced more and more for, you know, each dangerous mission they survive, depending on how dangerous it is. Now, I love this. I love the Suicide Squad concept. I've mentioned the Secret Six here on the show, which is not the Suicide Squad, but it's another team of villains. But I love the idea of a team of villains that you're kind of rooting for, even if, you know, they're not behaving the best, you know, or whatever. But what I think will be interesting here is, you know, in the context of the DC Universe, you're familiar with some of these villains because of the heroes that they counter in the various hero books you may have seen them in. Although Secret Six would be an example of some, at least one or two, like Ragman or Ragdoll or something like that. There's a couple of villains in Secret Six that I had virtually heard nothing about before they appeared in Secret Six. But, you know, even so, even if you take some well-known villains, they say that Deadshot is very likely to be at the top of the roster. And that's a Batman villain. But I mean, how many people have heard of Deadshot and know him as a Batman villain? So I think that some of the charm, some of the appeal of a concept like the Suicide Squad only exists if you are familiar with the superheroes that they, you know, counteract, if you will. That the novelty of villains teaming up together, you know, won't be as cool if you're not familiar with the heroes that they battle against. So I would love to see this movie made, but it'll be interesting to see how they make it accessible to the general public, you know, or if they're just counting on, you know, making it self-contained. See, I don't think it should be self-contained, though. I think if you're going to have Deadshot on there, you got to reference Batman at some point. I think you've got to reference the heroes that they counteract. Anyway, I've spent way too much time on that. Moving along, actor Samuel L. Jackson has inked a 9-picture. Say it again, 9-picture deal with Marvel to play Nick Fury in a slew of upcoming films, including Iron Man 2, other films likely to be part of this contract, Thor, Captain America, The Avengers, those three movies are all in the works, as well as sequels that any of those films may spawn. The deal also holds the possibility of a Nick Fury or a S.H.I.E.L.D. Feature film. Dang, 9 movies. I wonder what kind of paycheck he's getting for that. That's got to be kind of anticlimactic for an actor to get paid. I don't know. Maybe I'm just assuming they get paid all up front, and then they kind of have to carry through with these sequels. And, you know, oh gosh, that's a heck of a commitment. Anyway, April 24th, This is a movie I just found out about. Mutant Chronicles, it's called. Maybe you've heard about this. Starring Ron Perlman, John Malkovich, and Thomas Jane, as well as several other very familiar faces. This is the synopsis of the movie. I'd highly recommend doing a search on the movie title Mutant Chronicles. You'll find a trailer. Apple's got a trailer online. This is the synopsis. In the year 2707, war rages between Earth's four giant corporations as they battle over the planet's dwindling resources. In an era marked by warfare and social regression, the Earth is on the verge of ruin. Destruction is everywhere. Battles explode on every ravaged continent. Sounds good so far. Amidst heavy combat, an errant shell shatters an ancient buried seal, releasing a horrific mutant army. Is there any other kind of mutant army? Anyway, from its eternal prison deep within the earth, I guess if it's like an X-Men mutant army, then it's not necessarily horrific. So, okay. A horrific mutant army. As the mutant scourge threatens human extinction, a single squad of soldiers descends into the earth to fulfill the ages-old prophecy of the Mutant Chronicles and save mankind. It's got to be a single squad, right? I mean, it can't be like a evenly matched squad. It has to be a single squad. Otherwise, you know, how exciting is that going to be? The trailer looks really sweet, so I'd definitely recommend doing a search, Mutant Chronicles, and check out the trailer. Ghostbusters 3. Dan Aykroyd says that the script is commenced early summer. Well, I'm not sure how to read this. It just says script is commenced early summer. That's what he said. It's not quite a complete sentence, so I'm not sure exactly what that means. Hope to be in production by late fall 2009. So script is commenced early summer. Shouldn't he say script will be commenced early script? I don't know. Weird. Anyway, key phrase though, hope to be in production by late fall 2009. Well, me too, Dan. That would be really, really cool. A guy named Alex Littell somehow, according to Mania.com, gained access to a password-protected area of the Legendary website. That's the studio or the, I don't know what the technical term for it is, but the organization that distributes Superman, and I think they distributed the Batman movies as well, the recent two Batman movies. Anyway, Alex Littell got onto the Legendary website and to a password protected area and exposed summaries for several upcoming projects, including the much puzzled over Superman sequel. They report that the film is now being called Superman Unleashed. That's kind of interesting. And the summary uncovered reads thusly. Ramping up the action of its esteemed predecessor, this sequel to Superman Returns promises to raise the stakes and take the audience to heights of action that no other superhero movie can achieve. Yeah, okay, well, that sounds, I guess, pretty neato, but it sounds like a bunch of studio executives talking to each other and building each other's, you know, egos up, because I don't really think of Superman Returns as an esteemed predecessor. I thought it was good, but I thought it really fell short in quite a few areas. Didn't grow on me in the same way that Batman Begins did, although I thought Superman Returns would grow on me. It didn't quite. Promises to raise the stakes, that's good, and take the audience to heights of action that no other superhero movie can achieve. Well, that's a pretty bold claim, but again, sounds like studio execs talking to each other and trying to sell the movie. Not much info there, says Mania.com, but interesting to learn they've got a new title in mind. There's been some discussion of Bryan Singer pursuing a, quote, Superman as an angry god, unquote, approach to his sequel, and the new title certainly seems to dovetail with that. On the other hand, we have no idea if Singer is staying on the franchise, and many indicators seem to suggest he is not, including the little tidbit I shared with you a week or two ago about the Wachowski brothers being pursued to do a Superman trilogy. Oh, that would be awesome. So let's see that happen. Please, Hollywood, can we do that? Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Superman is an angry god, you know. Okay, what would make him angry god? You know, if they kind of go with that mentality, I'll tell you what would make him angry and would make for a really dark, crazy movie that you could rightly call Superman Unleashed. And I think I mentioned this on the, I maybe even mentioned this last week, but I think I mentioned on the podcast before. Here's what you do to make a really dark, messed up Superman sequel. First, we got to get rid of the kid, right? That was just a bad move to have Superman have a kid in the movie before he had a kid in the comics. That's just like groundbreaking territory. Anyway, either way, it's huge. It's a huge thing to do, and it should be done in the comic books first before the movie, because the movie is meant to be an adaptation, a bringing to life of the original source material. Don't screw with the source material in such a huge way, especially giving Superman a kid, because then he's stuck with that. And what are you going to do with that? That's just, you know, tough. That just totally changes the mythos. And that's the job of the comic books, not the movies, folks, when it comes to Superman, right? So we got to get rid of the kid. So here's what I suggest. There's been talk and rumors for a while now of Brainiac getting involved in the following movies. So here's what you do. You say that Brainiac, for some reason, just to mess with Superman or learn more about him or something. But anyway, the kid is like a Brainiac clone, or it's like not a real boy. It's like this sadistic plan of Brainiac to somehow screw with Superman. I don't know. You can make it work and find a logic for it. There's creative people that can figure that one out as to why Brainiac would do that. But the kid is like a Brainiac clone, right? And then he like... a switch goes off and his whole fake personality turns over and like he's this little, you know, I'm going to kill you, you know, kind of little crazy boy, although he'll probably be in his teens or whatever by the time they make this movie, or at least recast. And then like, you know, Superman, like the kid is attacking Lois and stuff, and Superman actually has to knock the kid out of the way, and it actually destroys him and breaks him apart, and Superman has to deal with the fact that he killed this thing that looks a lot like a kid that he'd invested so much love and emotion into, you know, just, and then he would feel really betrayed and just screwed up because he, you know, it's kind of like killing your own kid, and, you know, you could go some really dark places. You know, even though in the end he would know it wasn't a real boy, it was all fake and stuff like that, but just to be taken, you know, to think that you have a child that's 5 years old, and then to find out, you know, a year or two later that you don't have a child and it was all an evil trick being played on you to mess with your head, that could be a messed up, screwy, dark Superman story. But, you know, a reboot would be just as fine. Anyway, Ain't It Cool News, Mania.com says, reports that the Green Lantern movie, the live-action one, will shoot in Australia later this year. Production is to be split between New South Wales and Victoria. And here's some other news related to Green Lantern and film. The Wonder Woman DVD, Mania.com says, landed on our doorstep this weekend. I'm just going to read you this whole thing verbatim because I don't want to mess anything up. This is, you can see this on Mania.com. They said, we watched the movie and it's a great flick, talking about Wonder Woman, the animated movie, but that's not what we're here to write about today. Included as an extra on the DVD is the exclusive first look at DC Universe's upcoming Green Lantern animated movie. So I didn't know this. This was news to me that the same kind of first look feature that's going to be on that Watchmen, Tales of the Black Freighter thing, looks like it's going to be on Wonder Woman too. So, and since that DVD is just going to be like 26 minutes long, gosh, I probably won't even rent the Black Freighter. I was planning on getting the Wonder Woman animated thing anyway, and that's going to have the 10-minute first look thing. Sweet. Anyway, they says, we were surprised to see this since we hadn't even heard about the film before. Color us even more surprised when it's revealed that the film is due out later this year. The first 6 minutes of the 10-minute feature focuses on bringing the uninitiated up to speed with who and what the Green Lantern is in terms of the history of the comics as well as the character. But then producer Bruce Timm, director Lauren Montgomery, and voice director Andrea Romano, I love the names being mentioned so far because they were all involved with the original animated DC shows on TV. But all those folks begin to take us behind the scenes of the movie, introducing the cast along with artwork from the production. So who's voicing Hal Jordan in the movie? None other than Christopher Meloni, I don't know if that's how you pronounce his name, of Law and Order SVU fame. Now, I don't know who that is. So if somebody watches Law & Order SVU and thinks that's really cool, shoot me an email and let me know how cool that is, because I have no idea. The story follows Hal's acquisition of the ring and his journey into the core, where he meets his mentor and soon-to-be nemesis, Sinestro, played by Victor Garber of Alias. He played Sydney's dad. I am totally stoked about that, because me and my wife were big fans of Alias, at least for the first two seasons. And one of the reasons the main reason I continued to watch the show was for Victor Garber's character. I mean, that was just fantastic stuff. So Victor Garber as Sinestro. Okay, I think I'm just peeing my pants a little bit here, but we got to keep going. Anyway, the film looks to be heavy science fiction featuring spacefaring adventure rather than earthbound action, which is an interesting choice. In fact, it looks as if dozens of GL Corps members will appear, with Kilowog, Boudica, and Chip figuring prominently. Well, Chip is bad news. I'm not a fan of Squirrel, Raccoon, whatever he was, Green Lantern. I don't like DC likes to have animals that talk. I don't like it. I hate it. I think it's the stupidest thing in the world. Marvel doesn't have this, you know, little pet cause of making animals talk. I don't understand what DC thinks is so funny about apes and monkeys and dogs and cats that all are, you know, talking. Anyway, Michael Madsen voices Kilowog, while Trisha Helfer, Six from Battlestar Galactica, plays Boudica, which is an interesting choice to me because she doesn't strike me as having the rough enough kind of voice quality for a character like Boudica. But we'll see what their interpretation is and what she pulls out of her hat to make that happen. No actual animation from the film is revealed, but the preview does show lots of design drawings, storyboards, and animatics, some of which Mania.com presents in their article about this. So go over to Mania.com and look for this this little spiel, and you can see like images from the DVD feature. The first look closes with the declaration that Green Lantern will be on DVD and Blu-ray summer 2009. Oh my Lanta, I'm peeing my pants right now. And on a somewhat final and anticlimactic note, it's been confirmed that Linda Hamilton is very likely to do a voiceover cameo, voiceover only though, for Terminator Salvation coming out May 21st. Did you digest all that? That was just a ton of stuff that I had to throw at you today. I hope you dug it, because I sure did.
The Christian Song Smorgasbord brings you the latest and greatest in Christian music. Tunes from your favorite artists, along with selections from today's best independent artists. Join me, JD the Music Man, each and every week for an assortment of musical flavors. Simply go to www.thecssonline.net.
Scanning for Christian Geek. Tracking.
It is time now for the Christian Geek Radar, where I highlight some web space that's been claimed by a Christian geek. It's not necessarily Christian material, but it has a geeky theme like speculative fiction or gaming, and there's a Christian running it all behind the curtain. If you're a Christian and would like your site to be featured, send me a message at paeter@spiritblade.net. I'll check out your site, and we'll do a link exchange, and your site will be featured here on the podcast. Today, I am looking at StephenOShea.com, www.StephenOShea.com. Right on his welcome page, he makes it very clear that he's a Christian, and he's got, you know, like two really geeky sections of his website here. The first one is his art page. This is the kind of guy that you want to have in your role-playing group, you know, when you've got like a really cool character design and this cool concept in your mind, but you just suck at drawing, and so you can all just make little stick figures. Yeah, this is his sword, and it's really cool, you know, and no. This is the guy you want to have in your group. On his art page, and you can check out his art through a slideshow feature he's got on there. Like there's cool like dragons and elven or fantasy type chicks and guys with dwarven beard type people, and my description really blows, but this is really cool stuff. And then he's also got a miniatures page, which he just added this week, featuring all of the miniatures that he's painted. So again, there's, you know, two really strong indicators that this is exactly the kind of guy that you want to have in your gaming group, so that he can paint your miniatures maybe for a small fee, and draw your character for you on your character sheet. So my hat off to you, Mr. Stephen O'Shea. Everybody check out his website, www.StephenOShea.com. You see, guys, there are Christian geeks on the web, and you know what? I just proved it to you.
There are things under the skin of the world that most people would rather not think about. What goes on in that seemingly abandoned building you drive by every day? Children disappear, never to be seen again. News of cannibalism, self-mutilation, and exploitation of the helpless fills our airwaves. The stench of evil pervades our world. Who will stand in the gap? A small band of unlikely warriors have chosen to fight against the darkness. They don't realize what they've gotten themselves into or the sacrifices they will have to make. Their enemies are Legion. This fall, make sure you subscribe to Archangel Legion at www.archangelnovel.com. Your very soul may depend upon it.
Stop the
that you play.
Every word of God proves true.
The road will set you free.
The grass withers and the flowers fade, but the word of our God stands forever.
The road will set you free.
Today we're searching for truth in 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verses 12 through 20. Paul uses the phrase, "All things are lawful for me," acknowledging the popular thinking of the Corinthian culture. He then counters it with the phrases, "but not all things are profitable," and "I will not be mastered by anything." Another popular slogan of the day used metaphorically about sexual activity was, "Food is for the stomach, and the stomach for food." Now, this was a way of saying sex and pleasure are natural parts of life and have nothing to do with my spirituality. Paul responds by pointing out that God will do away with both of them. Well, what does this mean, and what is Paul's point here? Later in 1 Corinthians, we see indications that we will have resurrected bodies like Christ's body, the way it was post-resurrection. Look at 1 Corinthians 15, verses 20 and 23. We also get a sense of what these bodies will be like. Look also at 1 Corinthians 15, 42 through 58. Paul is indicating here that our current bodies and their need for food will be destroyed to make way for something different. By referring to the future eternal state of believers, Paul aims to keep the Corinthians' minds from focusing only on their immediate desires. The second point of his argument is that the body is not for immorality, he says, but for the Lord, and the Lord is for the body. Now, the Greek word for immorality here is specifically connected to sexual immorality. So the body is not for sexual immorality, but for the Lord. Right? And the Greek word used for Lord here means supreme master. In other words, our bodies are meant to serve God, and God's place is to be the supreme authority over our bodies. Paul continues to offer an eternal perspective on the issue. As believers, our spiritual connection to Christ is so strong and complete that believers are referred to as part of Christ's body. And in Genesis 2:24, we're told that when a man and woman have sex, they become one flesh. They are unified in the most intimate way humanly possible. So his point is that someone who has been made pure and perfect in the eyes of God, sharing intense closeness with him, should never turn around the next minute and experience intense unity in an adulterous relationship. Again, Paul points out in verse 18 that sexual immorality is against our own bodies, and this is wrong because our bodies, as believers, are now a place that God lives. Our bodies function as temples for the Holy Spirit. He uses the metaphor of temple here. They do not belong to us. The Holy Spirit lives inside them, and like a temple, our bodies are dedicated to serving Him. Verses 19 and 20 imply that we owe all that we are to God. He created us, and He created all that we enjoy. But He also bought us with a price. You know, I want to stop on just for a second on the idea of He created us and all that we enjoy. Because, you know, someone might say, well, there's plenty of things I enjoy that God didn't create. But we have to remember that God created creativity, that He created all the wonderful things that we enjoy conceptually in terms of our ability to bring them about. The concept of pleasure, God created. Now, we can twist those things using our own creativity in a sinful way, but all good things that we're capable of experiencing are ultimately, they ultimately originate with God. We just twist them, okay? So, again, let me just back up a little bit. Verses 19 and 20 imply that we owe all that we are to God. He created us. He created all that we are capable of enjoying. But He also bought us, quote, with a price, as it says here. We can't imagine what Jesus truly suffered on our behalf. Our justification, resulting in rescue from hell and entrance to heaven, that's a shortcut version of justification. Our justification is a free gift to us. But you know what? It wasn't free for God. He paid a terrible price for it. Paul says that our response to that should be to use our bodies and our lives to give God all the credit He is due, or the Bible often refers to that as glorifying God. That's basically what that means in a nutshell is drawing attention to God to give Him all the credit that He is due. The Bible does not support the idea that what we do with our bodies is our right. We hear that a lot today, that like, well, it's my body, you know, I can do what I want with it, right? The Bible doesn't support that idea. God designed our bodies and our sexuality with specific plans in mind that He wants us to enjoy. But using our bodies in a way that lies outside of God's intentions stands in defiance of God. There really is no such thing as a victimless crime in this regard. When we sin, we are always working against at least two people. First and foremost, against God. And secondly, we're working against ourselves. Next week, we're going to take a look at sex and marriage. Ooh. Coffeehouse question this week. Why do you think God wants us to be sexually involved with only one person in our lives? I was laughing at myself, not at the coffeehouse question, at my little ooh, but anyway. Why do you think God wants us to be sexually involved with only one person in our lives? What are the benefits of that, and what are some of the bad things we might be avoiding? Why does God want that, do you think? I'd love your thoughts on that. Send me an email at paeter@spiritblade.net, or you can leave me a voice message that I can play on the show by calling 206-350-1226. I'd love to hear from you. I got a couple of responses to my Battlestar query this week. First up, from Drew. He said, hey, just finished listening to your chat with Winston on Green Lantern and Spirit Blade. Good interview. Yeah, I'm watching Battlestar. Unfortunately, I think it's drifted away from its original spirit. Yes, the cooperation between Cylon and human is a new dynamic that was never explored in the first one, but it's, in my humble opinion, turned the new one into a disappointing soap opera. Yes, they are exploring more social dynamics, but I think the real conflict, basic survival, has been supplanted. I miss the Cylon attacks and waves of Vipers launching to defend the fleet, and the whole Baltar Cult of Baltar subplot? Boring, lame, with no direction. So that's my rant on it. Good visuals, story is getting weak. And my reply to him was, you make some really good points, Drew. I think it's better now than it was when they were on New Caprica. But the more human the Cylons become, the more of that original magic the show loses. I think it has replaced it with some new magic, but it's definitely a different kind of show now, and I miss some of the old elements that that you described. Hopefully, we'll see some cool space battles coming up to close the whole thing off. And yeah, this season, everything Baltar says and does is a waste of my time and of no purpose to the show. I got another great email from Jeff. He said, Peter, first I wanted to say I appreciate your work. In your recent podcast, you made mention of Battlestar Galactica, and I've had a nagging question I've been wanting to ask a fellow Christian since the early episodes of Battlestar Galactica. As a fellow Christian, I was curious your opinion of the sexual content in the earlier episodes of Battlestar. Because of a former pornography addiction, I had to stop watching and have not paid much attention since then, which was a hard decision both as a sci-fi geek and one who enjoyed the original series. I appreciate your thoughts. I hope this is not taken the wrong way. This is not meant in any way to judge. I'm just curious to hear another Christian's opinion. Thanks, Jeff. And I did check with Jeff to ask if I could use his name and his... he gave me permission to use his name. I didn't ask for that, but I asked if I could share his email here because I just thought it was great, and that all of us guys, we need to acknowledge and face this issue. And Battlestar is a good example of someplace we need to face it and figure out how are we going to respond. My response to Jeff via email was, Hi Jeff, I hear you loud and clear on this one. I also greatly admire your decision. At the end of the day, this is just a TV show, and you're not missing a thing. As for me, I watch most episodes with my wife. Her presence increases my sensitivity toward what my eyes are taking in, and as a bonus, she's there to let me know when a sex sequence is over, so I can admire our living room while she watches. Also, we usually watch it after it has been recorded and can fast forward through sections when we can sense where things are going. Haven't had to do that in a while, though. With my wife's work schedule, we're no longer able to watch episodes as often together, but after season two, the show became less sexy. It still has its moments to be cautious over, but on the whole, it's gotten better in that regard. Great question. Great question. It's... My wife has been great in helping me out with that because they don't really... It's not the guys that are getting stripped down. It's usually the girls that they're kind of... You know, Battlestar had this thing in the first two seasons where they was like, okay, let's see how far we can push television, you know? But, luckily my wife is enough of a geek, at least for, you know, to watch that show with me, that she was of great aid to me. And that's also the beautiful thing about DVD, with fast-forwarding technology is a wonderful thing. So anyway, great question. I have no idea what's coming up next week. I am, as you're listening to this, probably having a blast playing Descent with my friend Mark, who's in town this weekend, and we are geeking out into the wee hours of the morning, killing dragons and all kinds of nasty monsters on a geeky board game. So I can't think really beyond this weekend, which is going to be awesome. But anyway, you're done hearing about that. I obviously have nothing more to tell you, so you'd just as soon have this podcast be over, right? You'd rather I just kind of stop talking right now and do the usual thing where I kind of wrap things up and say, as I've already said, that I don't know what's coming next week, and then blah, 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 and then something about seek the truth. And
visit www.spiritblade.net. Peter is a crazy freak. Green Lantern is awesome. Visit www.spiritblade.net.